pulling back. Intel down some 9% now in after-hours trade. It did have a beat on both the top and bottom lines, and guidance wasn't too bad either.
Here's what's also true and new today is they're screwing up operationally, okay?
Sometimes you have success stories that are so exciting in the stock market that it takes your mind off of things like COVID or politics, anything that depresses you, and one of them is AMD.
There's a beat on the top and bottom lines for Big Blue.
Let's do a podcast, man.
Let's do a podcast. So, what are we talking about?
Earnings are starting to come in for a second quarter.
They are.
Yeah, we saw three groups of earnings. AMD, so we're recording this on Wednesday. AMD reported yesterday as we record this. Yep. Intel reported last week, and there's been a lot of drama on the Intel front. And then I also want to talk a little bit about IBM because they had some interesting earnings as well.
Okay.
So where do you want to start, Matt? You want to work backwards?
Sure. Yeah, let's start with
Intel.
Let's start with Intel.
So Intel's in the news. They delivered a solid quarter. I don't remember if they beat the number or met the number, but it was good performance. But the drama showed up when they said their 7-nanometer is going to slip out a year. There's been some, you know, leadership churn in the last 4 or 5 days as they dealt with the fallout of that.
It's funny because when you look at their numbers, their DCG, their data center group, it's up 43% year over year. You know, you think healthy numbers, right? Networking is up. Internet of Things is down. Mobileye is up. So there's some good stuff in there.
There's good stuff. They're hitting solid. You know, even in a down server market, like you said, DCG is up. I'm looking at the breakout. Their platform, I guess that's where servers live, is up 36%.
So it's been a healthy business. I think it's the downward guidance and the miss on the 7-nanometer, completely ignoring the fact that 10-nanometer for data center isn't even shipping yet, right?
I mean, and there's two ways to look at this, right? One is, you know, kind of from our perspective as data center analyst is, you know, are they serving the data center market well enough? Or are they losing ground? And we'll talk about AMD in a second. You know, 7-nanometer, to me, that's like a horse race metric when you look at, you know, Intel versus AMD versus some of these other guys. From an investment perspective, it's important. I mean, if I were an investor, it would be more important than if I were an IT buyer. I mean, there's nothing wrong with their 10-nanometer portfolio. And clearly, you know, buyers are responding to that if you look at these numbers.
I think I hear you. I think there's a different way to look at it, though. And that is, if I see that AMD is out-intelling Intel when it comes to, you know, getting product out and being on the advanced side of the process node and manufacturing node, then it tells me that maybe Intel can't execute against their strategy. I mean, 7, you know, when you get out, you know this, you know, when you shrink your package, you know, it's a power savings, performance gains, right? Those are both good. But bigger is Intel puts a lot of money into manufacturing. And they did two things. Number one, they said, all this investment we've made in building out these 7-nanometer or, you know, investing in 7-nanometer, it ain't quite working for us. And by the way, we had a big nightmare with 10-nanometer, right? You forget that thing slipped a couple of years, right? That's part one. Part two is, you know, so number one, the investments aren't bearing out like they thought they were going to. So can they even deliver? It's probably some confidence. Part two is they made discussions. There were some, you know, there were discussions and some language used that led people to believe that maybe they would look at outsourcing their manufacturing process if they can't do it internally, which is almost throwing up a white flag in some ways, right? Which I think is probably it's a confidence thing. So I see if I'm an IT buyer, I see AMD hitting on all cylinders. They're not being slowed down by this, you know, process node thing, right? Quote unquote process node thing. Meanwhile, Intel, who I've been relying on, is starting to really struggle. So I can see where it would have an impact on IT as well. And I think it's bearing out in the numbers.
It's bearing out the numbers. I mean, Intel still maintains, so AMD in their earnings call, we can mix this up a little bit, said their server business has finally hit double-digit growth, which tells me, you know, Intel is still somewhere between, 85 and 89.9% of the market of server parts. So sure. You know, the underdog story is good to tell, and you know, we talk about this in other verticals, which is you know, the orders of magnitude difference in the businesses, and AMD has a lot more headroom than Intel. So, yeah, I look at Intel and they're ceding, you know, they're losing ground to AMD. But man, it's a healthy business.
Very well. I hear what you're saying, but you're looking at, you look at it as, they're at, upwards of 90% of the market. I look at it as, they've lost 10% in very short order because Naples didn't do a lot for AMD. So there's the what do they have, and there's the what is their momentum like? And I think the momentum has all moved to Epic away from Intel. I haven't looked as deeply at the Intel numbers as I would like, but I would like to see what their cloud versus enterprise business is like. My guess is all of that growth is still in cloud, and that is. You know what that's like. That's the run rate business that just keeps getting ordered and ordered and ordered over and over without much thought. But I think you're starting to see the wind line up behind AMD, which is what is making people nervous. The other thing on Intel is they're losing executive management left and right.
Yes.
Tim Keller is gone. Mike Mayberry is retiring, who was, he was the guy that was driving everything around. Their process node development. I mean, there's a bit of
it's clearly not a fun place to be working right now. Yeah. So my steel trap mine, I do have the numbers right here in my head, and the cloud business grew 47%.
Yeah.
Enterprise and government up 34, and then what is comms SP 44%? Is that's
telecom guys?
That's telco. Okay.
Service providers, the telco guys.
Yeah, and they talked about higher ASPs in their 5G business, so I guess that all folds in. The other part of DCG, which is interesting, and I just want to make a note, not go deep here. So IoT was down a little bit, but their storage business, NSG, which stands for Non-Volatile Storage Group, I think, their storage memory business grew 76% year over year. Now, I know we grew from $940 million to $1.6 billion. But if we think back about 9 or 10 months, there was a oversupply of NAND in 2019 and coming out of 2018 and 2019, and a glut in the market, and everybody suffered. I think what this is showing me, and we've seen earnings from some others, Hynix is another example that came out last week. There's strength now again in the NAND market.
Yeah. And they're making huge margins on that.
Huge margins. They didn't break out how well Optane is doing. I still think that's struggling to get ground. And it's not a high margin, although it's a high revenue part. But, that's growing. And then PSG was up 2%.
Yeah. I will say this for Intel. And I don't mean to beat them up because I think they're brilliant. Brilliant company. They make, they're very competitive. But the thing I that gives me a lot of confidence in them, and we talk about this a lot, so I'm going to counter a little bit of what I said. AMD is finding, the winds lining up behind them on the data center CPU side, where Intel is just miles ahead. And this isn't regards to AMD, it's in regards to everybody in the market. Is Intel is lining themselves. Intel seems to understand that kind of in the grand scheme, CPUs are one element of the compute engine, right? And all of those other elements, talk about Optane being, combining different functions that drive better application performance, these emerging applications and workloads. When you talk about Optane, when you talk about the ASICs market and the FPGA market and all of those other tangential markets, not tangential, but related markets that are required to really stand up these new data center workloads that are going to be the mainstream here in a couple of years, they're there. So they are where the puck is moving to. And they're set up very, very nicely for the success. AMD still has to move beyond just EPIC, right?
Right. I hear you. Is there anything else we want to say about Intel?
No, I didn't. So you listened in on the call. Did you hear anything on the Raja Koduri front around when they're going to have their discrete?
No, nothing there. No.
Okay.
Just some other kind of quick hits, right? Client was down, which I guess makes sense given the current environment.
Yeah.
Not down, but the growth was 4%. Desktop was down 14%, while notebook grew 14%. That's not a surprise. I can't imagine anyone's buying desktops right now, certainly not IT buyers.
No.
Yeah, there's a weird thing where, their 5G and comms business was growing significantly, but IoT was down. It looks like what was behind that, they have a product called Mobileye, which targeted automotive market.
Yeah.
Automotive market has stalled out because of everything that's going on in the economy. So
Mobileye had a pretty good quarter, didn't it?
They were down 27%.
Oh, were they really?
Based on a stall in automotive production due to COVID-19.
It's okay. Interesting.
And then, IoT revenue was down 32% overall, which includes Mobileye. They blame that on COVID-19 impact. And then a statement I don't quite understand, which says U.S. government entity list publication. So I don't know if they fell out of the preferred vendor or what happened there. But
interesting. I wonder if, what they're providing. I wonder if that was like drones or what they're providing.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Why is cloud growing at 47%, Matt? I thought we saw cloud dipping overall as a vertical over the last couple of quarters.
You know, it's I think a lot of it has to do with COVID and the ability to spin up. And it's driven by virtual desktops. It's driven by turning on services for the business from an IT perspective that you can't deploy in the data center. There are a lot of drivers for it. It's not surprising to see a cloud business up.
So I will tell you what did surprise me. I think we've seen, and this started last quarter, largely every tech company is declining to give guidance this year because of the uncertainty. Intel did not take that tack. They're actually guiding down. They said their revenue is going to drop 5% year over year in Q3.
Yeah.
Their operating margin is going to drop 30%, down 6 points, I'm sorry, to approximately 30%. And then earnings are going to go down as well.
Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, after Q1, AMD guided down for the year as well.
Okay.
I thought they did. I'm pretty sure they did. Actually, I'm pretty sure they did. It wasn't terrible. The guidance wasn't terrible, but it was certainly down. I'll be interested to watch how, COVID impacts the next. Summer's always dead for these guys, that, but if there is a better response to COVID and enterprise picks up,
right.
I'll be curious to see how that impacts the silicon guys, the semiconductor guys.
Well, let's talk about the other semiconductor guys.
Who's that?
Everyone is excited about AMD's earnings yesterday.
Aren't they?
To hit the high points, what is it? Their quarterly revenue, they came in at $1.93 billion. That's up 26% year over year.
Yeah.
Gross margins, 44%, which is up 3 points.
Yeah.
Which they say is largely driven by Ryzen and EPIC margins.
Yeah.
Although their semi-custom product, they lost some margin there. They said their profitability. Go ahead. You're going to say something.
I was going to say the semi-custom, they're doing a new part. So it's always, you always lose money up front on that. It's a low margin part anyway. So
here's, I'll just throw out some stats and we can talk about it. So computing and graphics segment. So they have an interesting way of counting. So they've got computing and graphics, and then they have a group called Enterprise, Embedded, and Semi-Custom, which, you know, I know you wrote about recently. So computing and graphics, is that just their consumer business?
Yeah, it's their desktop notebook, and is it still called Radeon? Their consumer graphics parts, you know, the gaming graphics.
It is still called Radeon. So this is interesting because, again, looking at Intel, so Intel grew 4% in their client business. Ryzen grew 45% year over year. Graphics was down 5%. This is an interesting statistic. So, again, looking at client, this is their highest client processor revenue in over 12 years, which was right about the time you and I left. So,
actually, it's about the time we joined, isn't it?
You're right. You're right. Yeah. It's about the time you went into the client group and stalled their sales. I'm not surprised to see record quarterly notebook processor units because, you know, notebook market has been hot as everyone transitions to work from home. Especially on the enterprise side.
Everything I read was that Ryzen, they took share from Intel on the client side. I don't follow desktop sales. I probably should. But I know that the new Ryzen mobile part lagged the desktop part. But I also knew that it was supposed to be a pretty hot part. So it sounds like they found traction with it.
It's a hot part. Listen to this statistic. So there are over 50 Ryzen 4000 notebooks in the market. And I'm guessing that means 50 different SKUs, not just 50 notebooks. They're launching another 30-plus ultra-thin premium gaming and commercial OEM notebooks, second half. On the commercial side, which is what you and I focus on, HP and Lenovo are both ramping their first enterprise-targeted notebooks powered by Ryzen during second half.
Yeah, have you ever really followed the notebook market, the commercial notebook market?
A little bit, but it's been a decade. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about commercial client.
Yeah, I'm always. It's interesting because it almost feels like on that side they're almost even more conservative than, you know, like when HP was company, right? It was almost like the notebook folks were even more conservative in their adoption of our parts than AMD's parts than the server folks were.
You said our parts.
I know our when we were there, right?
Yeah.
But it felt like there was a great level of kind of hesitancy in adopting and promoting these. And I know some of it has to do with security, some of it has to do with reliability and all that. But they're going, AMD is going gangbusters right now on the Ryzen front.
They can't fast enough. And then they're moving a lot of Radeon products in. Through Apple. So all of Apple's GPU business, or AMD is Apple's only supported GPU. It will be interesting looking at the client market next year as Apple starts ramping their ARM-based parts, which I think we learned at the Apple Developer Conference is not going to support AMD, at least out of the gate, what that does to AMD's Radeon business. Because outside of the Apple world, it's an NVIDIA market, and then we also have Intel coming in with their consumer GPUs sometime over the next 18 months. So that business is going to get extremely competitive, I think, for AMD.
It is, and this will be interesting too. You know, it'll be fun to watch the impact. As an observer, fun to watch the impact. Intel's coming into the market with a competitive discrete GPU will have on AMD's overall business, right? Because they're going to have to shift resources to stay competitive on that side. And what does that do for the resources you have on? Now, there are two different organizations, obviously, but I'm talking about budget shifts, right? Mm-hmm. And focus shifts that are going to have to take place. Intel can throw the people at it. AMD can't necessarily throw the money and the people at these problems.
Yes, you are right. So let's talk about server. They gave some color on the call. And then let's talk about numbers. But AMD said that this is the first time they've captured double-digit share of the server processor market. And that's probably in the company's history. I think during the early Opteron days, we peaked at 5 or 6%. And they're showing continued growth there. If you look at the actual numbers, so again, enterprise, embedded, and semi-custom, AMD's grouping server parts with their semi-custom gaming stuff. But they're saying quarter over quarter, they're up 62%, driven by increased server processor share. Microsoft has added EPYC processors to power Office Online apps. I don't know what that means. Who is Tencent?
Tencent is a Chinese cloud provider.
Okay, so Tencent is, this is a highlight from AMD's news. Tencent ramped multiple millions of VMs powered by EPYC. So I'm guessing it's a big part of their infrastructure.
Yeah.
Google announced exclusive use of EPYC to power Google confidential computing VMs. Yeah. Which is interesting to me. Is there something, can we talk a lot about some of the security features that are showing up in Intel's parts? Does AMD have some secret sauce on the security front that would make Google choose them for their
secure computer? Yeah, they actually have a security, they have silicon dedicated to security. It's based on ARM's Trust Zone. It's essentially a co-pro, but they also have an encryption mechanism for encrypting, so you can physically encrypt your memory, which is nice, but also you encrypt VMs individually, and not just encrypt them, but encrypt them in such a way that there's a pass through of the hypervisor to the encryption key, the key store that sits in the silicon. So even if the hypervisor, you have no access into that VM. It's truly owned by whoever owns the keys.
So it's the high end. I know that Intel has a proprietary solution along those lines. Does Intel also support the Trust Zone?
Yeah, no, they don't. Intel doesn't. And Intel really doesn't. What Intel does is they encrypt memory spaces. Mm-hmm. So you have to, in order for, so it doesn't work with hypervisors. It works at the application level. And you have to rewrite your applications to take advantage of this capability. But if you're running things in a VM, it all breaks on you.
Yeah, okay.
And so you combine that with the side channel issues, exploitations that Intel had, and AMD has a distinct advantage on the security front. Just going back to something, you mentioned AMD and double digits. They were actually at about 25% share back about 10 years ago.
Of the server market?
Of the server market, yeah. Okay. They had very high share. That was at the height of Opteron in the early days.
Okay.
We dipped below double digit back in like 2012 or so.
Okay. I did not know that. What else? So I guess Google Cloud, they appreciate AMD's approach to security.
Well, you know, it's not just Google Cloud. VMware does it too. So VMware just, in a very recent release, enabled ESX to recognize, they call it SEV, Secure Encrypted Virtualization as well. Okay. So even in the ESX hypervisor, you can encrypt these VMs and they essentially drill a hole through the hypervisor to go directly down into memory. So yeah, that was a big win for AMD. Microsoft had had it for a while with Hyper-V, but VMware enabling it was a big deal.
That is, okay. Yeah. What are you laughing at? Did I have no response to that? I have some responses.
You're like, that's boring.
It's not boring. Here's what I'm thinking. So not to relive Steve's history, I hired into AMD in 2004, and my first job there was on the secure virtualization. At the time, they treated security and virtualization together, right? And a lot of this was driven from a program Microsoft had that eventually they didn't roll out called Inkscub, which, you know, predicted a lot of what they're shipping now. And what's going through my head as you're describing this, it's like, you know what, we wrote these specs 15 years ago. And it's good to see them come into fruition. I think it's good for consumers for sure. And in a cloud world where, you know, all of these side channel attacks and cache attacks are rampant, this is exactly the kind of solution you want to see out there.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I remember when you hired me on the whole Trinity project that was going on. Mm-hmm. And actually, I ran into you a few times before that when you were on your Steve the Virtualization King roadshow. Mm-hmm. I think you had t-shirts made for that, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, it was funny. I remember the early days of that, the early days of AMD's current security implementation, uh-huh. The secure memory in particular. And you could see they would run these, you know, these scrub attacks on memory. And you could see the, you know, the unprotected memory versus the protected physical memory. And it's legitimate. It the cloud guys loved it. I don't know if broadly it's been adopted in enterprise yet, but the cloud guys absolutely loved it.
Well, you know, enterprise is a different environment, and you don't have to worry so much about VMs attacking each other in a way you do in a public cloud environment, right? AWS clearly likes Epic Parts too. They've launched EC2. They call them C5A. Great naming over there, man. It's like the military. So they announced their EC2 C5A instances based on Epic. While I'm talking about AWS, to digress for a second, Amazon also announced this week, as we record this, that their Graviton 2 instances, they're juicing the storage. They've added NVMe attached SSDs locally on. I'm guessing, I don't know, but the Graviton 2, I'm guessing, are not shared resources. I'm guessing if you get a Graviton instance, you've got your own motherboard. Just because of some of the architectural choices they're making. You don't think that's true?
I think there are multiple instances, right? It depends on the Graviton 2 instance you get, I think. There's the memory optimized or the applicant storage optimized, I forget exactly what they call it. And then there's the general purpose.
Okay.
I think the general purpose stuff is shared. I don't think the optimized instances are shared.
Okay. Go ahead.
Either way is, you know, I know we say it, or I say it every podcast, when the hell is ARM going to get some love, man? You know, it's like... You know, you look at the numbers that, you know, Amazon shows on performance. It's like, these are legit parts, you know, very legitimate parts.
I know. And for the many of the workloads running in public cloud, it's good enough. And we talked a lot about this in the last podcast. And you know, we're going to talk about it again, I think, a lot more. When's the ARM Early Virtual October. Conference? Early October. So we should line up some guests from ARM
We'll have Mohammed back on to talk about it. And they're not just good enough, Steve. They're better in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know. I don't want to digress on ARM too much. But, you know, as we said in our last podcast, this is very reminiscent of, you know, x86 versus RISC in the 90s. But it's also a little reminiscent of Linux versus mainstream Unix in the 90s and even Windows, right? You had this thing that's growing up out of kind of the tech side of the more technical side of the world that just starts slowly infiltrating and taking over. And I think, you know, that's what we're seeing with ARM.
Remember how open source used to be like almost a four-letter word in the enterprise? And everything was Skunkworks.
Yes, right. I can't put my copyright on it. I'm not going to ship it. And now everything is open source.
Yes.
But let's get back to AMD. So we've got AWS, Dell, HP, and Lenovo both expanded AMD offerings with additional second-gen EPYC processor platforms. I misread second there. Largely every server OEM is expanding their portfolio.
Yeah, I think Dell went a little bit bigger than the others. They all have a healthy portfolio. Dell just rounded out, though. I like their approach. They took single socket, dual socket, and then density optimized. But, you know, they went for each kind of for each of those, like single socket, they went kind of the, you know, just, you know, basic compute, and then they're really the compute optimized, you know, like lots of storage, lots of capabilities for both the single socket and the dual socket. And they, what I also like is they took Epic-based platforms and they expanded their solution, their ready solutions and appliances, if you will, offerings greatly so that it's incorporated into all of those ready solutions, which I think is really smart.
It really is.
We'll get someone on from Dell on to talk about this a little
bit. Yeah, we should. And not to go all old man again, but when Dell shipped their first AMD part in any platform, it was front page news everywhere. And
yes.
Now they're with how the world changes. You know, you look at what Dell's doing. You look at Microsoft and their embrace of Linux and open source. It's crazy.
It's a brave new world.
It is. And then the last
can
bit.
It's interesting to see how when you look at all of the major OEMs, Dell, Lenovo, HPE, Cisco, so on and so forth, and you look at how they have adopted and brought to market Intel versus AMD, it's very interesting. And I guess this makes sense, but when you look at Intel, there's just it's countless number of SKUs. It's almost impossible to keep track of all of the different offerings, right? With AMD, and maybe it's just because it's, and I think it's because it's newer, but it's interesting to see the Epic rollouts, and each company has their own, they know where their strengths are in the market. Mm-hmm. Lenovo, it's, the high performance computing and the kind of volume business. And they have each built gravity, you call it Epic gravity, around those areas of strength that they have in the market, which tells you they're really trying to drive greater adoption of these platforms because that's where they see their greatest opportunity.
Well, sure. Yeah, and, Epic is not a me too part. It's got, it has a very distinct value proposition in a lot of workload mm-hmm. segments. And they're not standing still. So this is the bit of news I think that people are comparing against Intel. Intel talked about, as we talked about earlier, is delaying their 7-nanometer or, because of manufacturing issues, I think is what the press is shaking out to say. AMD is on track to begin shipping Zen 3 Milan data center CPUs later this year. What's new and different about Zen 3? Is that significant?
So there's a lot that's different that can't be talked about yet. It's not publicly disclosed, but it's going to be in a 5-nanometer process node. For people who are listening, they're like, what's 5-nanometer, 7-nanometer, 10-nanometer? Without getting into it, one thing that's important to note is that not all process nodes are created equal. It's fair to say that TSMC or Samsung or LoFo, their process nodes aren't necessarily as efficient as Intel's. So, just because AMD is going with the 5-nanometer, it doesn't mean that Intel has more efficiency. So their 5-nanometer actually gives you a little bit better power efficiency, a little bit better performance. 5-nanometer from AMD is more equivalent to like a 7-nanometer from Intel.
Got it.
They're going to be getting 5-nanometer, and there's a lot more to it that we can't talk about yet. But
that's fine. But the key takeaway here is Lisa's team is executing.
Boy, I'll tell you what, man. You have to love Lisa Su. She has taken that company, and a lot of the work started, with Rory and others before, kind of. Mm-hmm. Setting them on the right course, but she has created an execution machine over there. It is incredible what they're doing.
Yes, and that's really what it's about, right? It's about the execution as much as it is the IP they're generating. The last thing I would say about AMD is they're also giving guidance. They did not guide down. They're predicting for FY 2020. And their fiscal year, I think, aligns with the calendar year. They're going to grow approximately 32% year over year.
Was this on this call they did this?
I'm looking at the slides. So they're up right in front of me here. So they're saying Q3 2020 and FY 2020 outlook, non-GAAP. They're predicting revenue in Q3 of $2.5 billion, plus or minus $100 million, with FY 2020 growth of approximately 32% year over year. They're also looking at margin expansion, only a point. They're looking at, not a point. They're looking at approximately 45% margin for the year.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think they. I thought in Q1 they were guiding down because of maybe not. That's
well, wow. Well, you know, Q1. We're.
I know it changed. Yeah,
we're 5 months into this. We're 5 months into this new economy. So I'm looking at their stock price, and this is what hurts me. So they are up 12% today. Uh-huh. They are trading, as we record this, at $76 a share.
Yeah.
And this kills me because when I left AMD, I sold all of my shares at about $3. and walked away from options at $30 that were underwater. And now look at this, $76.
Yeah.
Good for them. Good for everybody there. And what a great story.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one last thing. It's worth noting that, you know, they have a new guy over there, Dan McNamara, who heads up the server business. And, you know, there's the, you talk about, you know, it's all about execution, but it's execution on building and delivering product. It's also execution on bringing that to market and finding, you know, relevance. And I think he's been a great, he came over from Intel. He's been a great addition to that kind of the back end of that execution machine, right? Driving it in the market, getting the right design wins, getting the right partnerships,
and a key part of that, right? When I said execution earlier, I was, you know, mostly talking about manufacturing and product stuff. But you're exactly right. And if you look at the way that the OEMs and AMD's partners are talking about these parts and positioning these parts, you know, they're absolutely doing something right on the relationship front. It's unusual, I think, in this business to see OEMs get excited about hardware. But they do when it comes, not just EPYC, but, man, the Ryzen, the Threadripper stuff, it's a great story. And it's not just because it's better price performance, right? These are some kick-ass parts that are getting people excited.
Yeah, you're right. You know, a lot of times, like, nerds like you and I will get down into the, you know, total cost of ownership or performance per watt per dollar, and get into all these metrics that, mm-hmm. you know, unless you're a true architect, you don't really give a crap about. But this goes beyond that. You know, this doesn't require a lot of critical thought. These are just, you know, from a billboard perspective, you know,
right.
bigger, not bigger necessarily, but better.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears entirely. And, I just want to hit a couple of points on IBM's world.
Yeah.
So IBM announced their earnings, I guess a few days before Intel, maybe a week. And again, I'm not a financial analyst. I don't keep track of how they're comparing against the street necessarily. But they delivered a strong quarter, and there are a couple of segments where they were particularly strong that I just want to hit on. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody questioned the Red Hat acquisition and how relevant that was going to be to IBM. So if you look at their highlights for the quarter, it gets confusing when the fiscal and calendar year doesn't line up. So they just finished their first quarter. Red Hat grew 20% year over year. What did I want to talk about? Cloud is up 23%. Cloud was a bright spot. Red Hat was a bright spot. But let's talk about systems. I'm talking slowly because I'm scrolling through the presentation looking for the numbers. So
It's nice to see Red Hat, by the way, as you're scrolling. It's nice to see the Red Hat, you know, and people were concerned that, you know, it's going to get sucked into the quote-unquote IBM machine. And I think people are far too negative on that acquisition. It's nice to see Red Hat kind of maintain their autonomy, yet IBM be able to leverage the goodness of Red Hat within its offerings. I mean, they've done a good job of walking that line.
They do. And they talk about Red Hat and cloud in kind of the same breath, right? I mean, Red Hat is there to help bolster the cloud story. And this is interesting. I was on a Twitter discussion. Was it last week the Google Cloud Summit was happening? Sometime in the last 2 weeks. And somebody said,
you mean the 4 month long Google Cloud Summit?
Uh-huh, yeah. And one of an industry analyst who covers cloud stuff said, is IBM even relevant in cloud anymore? And if you look at the breakout of the numbers for worldwide revenue around cloud spend, public and private, IBM is number five. Mm-hmm. Number five behind the three big public cloud players, the Chinese guys, and then and then IBM is there, right? And it's not just private cloud. One of the things I've noticed is IBM is continues to update their portfolios over the past 18 months. Every software release now is embracing public cloud in a way that it didn't before. It used to be all IBM cloud. So these guys are a significant player. And it's not that they want to be your cloud provider necessarily. I think at one point they did. But now it's all about, I want to help you tell this cloud story. They have some IP that they're moving there, right? And Red Hat's a big part of that. I think that also drives a significant amount of their services business, which is strong. But let's talk about software and systems, because that's what you and I care about.
Yeah.
Let me just give you some numbers. So their overall software and systems segment was up 4% year over year, and it's a blend. So IBM Z, we've been talking about the mainframe on and off, I guess, since we've been doing this podcast. IBM Z is up 61% year over year.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think to the refresh cycles, and I'm trying to think.
So they announced some new hardware the back half of last year. But what's interesting to me is, how often do you refresh your mainframe? This is a market I need to go learn more about. When I think of mainframes and IBM Z, you put these millions of dollars into this product, and I expect it to last a while. So if I own one of these, am I rushing out every refresh cycle and buying a new one?
I think a question I have, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, or if you're, what you're looking at in the charts, but does Linux One fall under the Z umbrella?
Yes, it does.
I think Linux One is where you're seeing a lot of the growth, right? And that is, for people who are listening or watching our beautiful faces, Linux One is, think of, I hate to say mainframe because IBM hates to position it that way, but it is a big honking Linux platform that's great for service providers. Whether it's an MSP or a cloud service provider, it's a great solution, or even for enterprises that have a lot of,
This will run millions of instances of Linux side by side, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. I think that's probably where you're seeing the growth. It's a pretty compelling solution story. And I think if people can get, you and I are weird because we think IBM, we think mainframe. Maybe the younger generation isn't so caught up in the negative connotations of not even negative, but legacy connotations of mainframe. But I don't know, but that Linux One platform is pretty beastly.
So you and I are industry analysts. We cover data center segment, and we don't know enough about this. I'm making a note here. I'm going to reach out to IBM and see if maybe somebody can come talk to us about where IBM Z plays and how we should think about it.
I would caution, though, that even with an IBM, the Linux One team, even though it's in the Z portfolio, they run as their own group. I think
I just think we need more color on this because it's a significant part of IBM's business. And looking at the dollar figures around this, it's a significant part of the overall IT spend, right?
Sure.
So that'd be interesting. I'll tell you what's not a significant part of overall IT buying, and that's power. Power's down 32%. Are they largely just selling to legacy customers at this point? And this is going to die, it's like Dex Vax, where they run life support until there's still people running Vax for legacy software.
It certainly seems that way, right? And they've gone to the whole open source model on power design. I think it's a and it's funny, if you looked at the power platforms, they're again, you talk about performance beasts, right? Uh-huh. They're a performance beast, and you look at the open compute movement, it's tied to it, and some of the designs that were coming out from companies like Rackspace around power-based designs were incredible, but just never found that traction.
Well, it doesn't have a big ecosystem. The price performance relative to x86, is it worth the premium I'm paying for that? And then it largely runs AIX or Linux, but if you're buying power, you're buying it for AIX. And if you look at just AIX licensing, it's anyway.
It's funny, if you look at IBM's approach or the power approach to the server market versus the ARM-based approach to the server market, right? One came above the x86 performance profile, one came below, what many would consider below. And it's interesting because it seems to me that, the ARM ecosystem is finding a lot more success than power was. Power ever did. But anyway.
I hear you. The other thing I just want to point out, and I know a little bit of this is associated with mainframe refresh. So IBM storage unit, and IBM is the number 5 ranked storage player, or number 4, it vacillates. They have experienced their third consecutive quarter of positive growth in their storage business. So this is the first storage earning we've seen this quarter, so we don't know how they stack up. But if you look at last quarter, the market shrank, and only two storage vendors showed positive growth. One was Pure Storage, which grew at 12%, and IBM grew, I think, at 3%. In this past quarter, IBM Storage grew at 19%. Some of this is mainframe related. The storage group, their software doesn't report under storage. I know they take a significant amount of revenue from their software piece.
What do you attribute the very strong quarter to? Is this just a function of more clock getting turned on and they're supporting?
I think some of it is, if IBM Z is growing, so is your mainframe storage, right? So some of that is that. IBM has been, very aggressive about keeping their hardware refreshed. They have some of the best storage hardware on the market, right? If you look at the breadth of their portfolio. So it'll be interesting to see is this refresh cycle kind of evens out, what that does to their storage business. I only bring it up because it's notable relative to the rest of the industry. First quarter we saw IBM and Pure were the only growth. Dell and HPE shrank.
Such an emphasis on that. Shrank.
That's my new favorite word. Is it shrunk or shrank?
Shrank.
I can't break out the dictionary right now because we're on a podcast.
I'm sure it's right on your desk there.
Yeah. The other thing, and we talk about IBM and cloud, I'm just throwing numbers out right at this point. I'm running out of things to say. But their cloud revenue was up 86% year over year.
Say that again. Sorry.
Their cloud, IBM's cloud revenue was up 86% year over year. So they delivered $1.3 billion in cloud revenue, and that does not include services in the past quarter.
You are right. I think they get so they just get so overlooked. And I wonder, obviously, they're not overlooked by everybody because they've got a very healthy business, right? And I can't imagine that's just the banks and the government.
No.
Right?
Well, this is one of these companies, and we talked about, I think we even talked about this last podcast with someone else. They've been around so long, and everybody has such preconceived. We don't talk about them. Analysts don't talk about them. The press doesn't talk about them, right? They're not young and exciting. They're right. Just sitting there, and they're executing.
Yeah.
And, everything they do, I think, on the systems and software side is to supplement and drive the strategy around cloud and services.
Yes.
Their storage business with the IP they have, just to take an example, and I think you could say the same about maybe their AI business and some others. If they were just to go and target a vertical around storage or AI or whatever, they could be a compelling competitor there. But that's not what they're choosing to do. They're choosing to, throw all their weight behind. Certainly Z is a cash cow, right? So it's the Z business and it's cloud, mm-hmm. right? And everything is in support of that. They're not trying to be a server vendor.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yes.
And you know, Lenovo has greatly benefited, I think, from IBM's desire not to be just another OEM.
Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with you on that.
Okay, yeah. So I don't have any other color to add there, but I just thought it was an interesting set of earnings from IBM.
Who's coming up in the next couple of weeks for earnings?
I don't know. How about that? I should know this.
I should too. That's why I asked you, because I'm like, man, I should know, but Steven, so, your roles.
Dell announces on August 27th, so that's about a month away.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. HPE announces
right around that same time, right? They're all
actually Google's telling me they're also on 8/27, although they typically don't do the same day. Who else do we watch?
Cisco.
Cisco, right. I know this is compelling. Cisco announces on August 12th. So that's a good one. So there's a lot. So we should, you know, by the end of August, have a pretty clear picture of what second quarter looked like. And second quarter, this is the first pandemic quarter, which was not, you know, transitional. So,
right.
I think that's it. You and I, we have some guests coming up. I don't know that we want to pre-announce them, but keep watching the space. We have some good guests coming up on the podcast over the next couple of weeks.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
It will be interesting.
It'll be fun.
It's always fun.
You look smart with glasses on.
You know, I paid extra for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take them off for a second. Yeah, you don't look as smart. That was funny.
Did that work?
That did, yeah.
All right, let's let our listener go and tune in again. Same bat time, same bat channel.
See you next week.